And good morning. It's 10 minutes now before 9 o'clock. It's Thursday morning here at WGBH's Morning Edition. And joining me, as he always does, is Jared Bowen. Good morning, Jared.
Good morning, Bob.
Well, let's start off with making news this morning, and that's about Citigroup pulling its support from several theaters here in Boston. How's that going to affect the theater scene?
Well, it's interesting. Citigroup has been a major funder of what's known as the City Center, which includes the Wang Theater, the Schubert Theater, and the Colonial Theater. And they basically bought naming rights, and they bring a level of sponsorship. It's significant in that City Center really has changed their performing and arts model over the last couple of years. In fact, tomorrow begins Art Week Boston. You can find all of these events at artweekboston.org, where they incorporate a bunch of arts organizations throughout the area. There are lots of free events. This is something they've really been able to do partly with funding like this. But Joe Spalding, who heads City Center, as I know he's told WGBH News and he told the Boston Globe this morning, Citigroup provided about less than 10% of their funding. It will be interesting to see what happens yet, but he will go out there. He will get new naming rights. But it's worth mentioning that a report came out of Arts Boston last year that indicated that most of the funding that comes to arts organizations in this region comes from private individuals. It doesn't come from government, and it doesn't come from corporations, because we've seen the departure of major corporations in this region over the last decade.
In fact, it's good not to be too dependent on them, that's for sure.
Exactly.
Let's begin now. We talk about a real classic here in American theater, Boys in the Band, a truly groundbreaking play that's going to be, is being restaged here in Boston, and Ryan Landry, of all people, is in it.
Yeah, Ryan's making a departure from his own group, the Gold Dust Orphans, to star in this production because he's been very enamored of this play, as many are, and this is why Zeitgeist Stage Company, led by David Miller, is presenting it now, and it's being presented at the BCA through October 3rd. That's the Boston Center for the Arts. The Boys in the Band, it's a very fascinating piece. It's a great time to look at this piece. It was written in 1968, and it's set in 1968. And you have this man, who Michael, who is throwing a birthday party for his friend Harold, who is played by Ryan Landry, and all of their gay friends come together to celebrate this birthday party. But in the process, they really work through a lot of issues that they're having over the course of this night. They have conversations about who they are in society, how they got to be the way they are, how their parents treated them, how open they can be with their sexuality, especially since Michael's old college roommate, Alan, is coming and he's straight and doesn't necessarily know Michael's secrets. I think it's a very clever, witty, funny, charming play. When it's not not charming as well, because it can also be very, very vicious. But it's fascinating to look at this piece because it's 1968, right around the time of Stonewall. AIDS has not happened yet. Of course, the major advances in gay rights have not happened yet. So it's very interesting to hear this dialogue from this time. And I think it holds up incredibly well. It's extremely well directed here. And there's very, very raw emotion in this very small space at the Boston Center for the Arts. You almost feel like you're in the living room with them. And so I think you feel that emotions awash over the characters come to you as well.
The Boys in the Band we've been talking about. Next, Appropriate, presented by the Speakeasy Stage Company at the BCA through October 10th.
Yeah, Appropriate is a new piece by playwright Brandon Jacobs Jenkins, and it finds three siblings coming together to go through their father's Arkansas plantation home, this large, sprawling home. He's just died, and they're coming together and coming from very different lives. You realize that these siblings haven't necessarily been close. You have the older brother who's upper middle class, very successful, knows that he's successful. You have the younger brother who is sort of banished from the family because he had a sexual dalliance with a young woman that was very, very inappropriate. And then you have the sister, Toni, who has a difficult relationship with her teenage son. She seems to have trouble with alcohol. She's going through a divorce. So you bring these three siblings together in this house, confronting their memories, and it becomes this explosive play, especially when they discover a photo album filled with pictures of young, of dead black men and women, suggesting that their father had been involved with lynchings, and they must come to terms. Here's a little slice from this from Appropriate, where Toni is defending her father after just learning of this terrible racist tie.
What did our father ever do to anybody?
Okay, you know what, Frank? Give me the photos. I'll throw them
away. No, I want them.
What are you doing?
I am keeping the bigotry in the family.
Wow.
It's tough, tough stuff. Now, Brandon Jacobs Jenkins is a rising playwright, and part of the reason he called it appropriate is because you may remember a few years ago he presented a play called wrote a play called Neighbors, which was presented by Company One, and it featured a black-faced minstrel family moving next door to an interracial family. Very incendiary. Many people told him that is not appropriate for writing in the theater. So he's called this appropriate based on that, but it's also appropriate because he's taken a lot of major Tennessee Williams, Arthur Miller, of major family dramas and incorporated them into this one.
Fascinating. Okay. Next, the new director of the Museum of Fine Arts, who sat down for his first interview with you.
He did. His name is Matthew Teitelbaum. He comes from the Art Gallery of Ontario, as we've talked about, and he took over at the beginning of August. And so I sat down with him recently just to get a sense of what he's thinking as he works his way through the museum. Now that he got lost his first couple of days, but he knows his way around now.
Not hard to do.
One of the first things I asked him, because I think a lot of people are wondering this, he's the son of a contemporary artist. He worked at the ICA right here in Boston for a time from 1989 to the early 1990s. So I asked him about how that background in contemporary art might be represented at the MFA.
I don't see us creating more contemporary spaces and taking over galleries. I mean, that I don't think we need, but I do think we need to find additional platforms for the voice of the contemporary artist. So that might be the occasional project in the historical galleries. It might be stumbling upon contemporary art in other spaces that are a bit unexpected. That interests me because I think there are ways in which you can bring art alive through the voice of the artist, all art alive.
Now, in his first couple of months, he told me he's been walking the galleries and meeting with curators, trying to really get to know the collection. And one thing he said, and I find him to be very understated, very sincere, but he said, whatever you think about the MFA's collection, take it up a notch. He is extremely impressed by the holdings. And so he's challenging curators right now to tell him what they love about this collection. One of the things he plans to do is really make the museum even more community-minded. One of the ways he wants to do that is he's looking at what has just happened with ISIS, tearing down monuments across the continent, across the globe, and making people understand why these old pieces, why this old stuff, as he called it, really does matter. I also wanted to get a sense of his leadership style. And, many major museum directors across the world are deliberately provocative. They're major personalities within their institutions. And I asked him if it's part of his job description to be provocative.
I don't gravitate towards the word provocative. This doesn't interest me particularly. I would hope that people looked at me and said that I was values-driven, that I understood what it meant for this institution to be great, and I worked hard to align all the resources and the energies to make that happen. So in the end, I think I'm much less important than the art. I mean, it goes without saying, I'm much less important than the creative people who are actually connecting with audiences on a day-to-day basis.
So we'll see what he does with the museum. He said basically in terms of strategic plans, there's nothing immediate. There's nothing radical forthcoming. And he says the answers are there to unlock about what the museum's future will be.
It'll be fascinating to see what he unfolds as things unfold there at the MFA. And quickly, The Intern opens in theaters tomorrow.
Yeah, this is, you've probably seen the ads everywhere. It's as sweet as it looks, I can tell you that. Robert De Niro plays Ben Whitaker. He's a 70-year-old widower who enrolls in a senior internship program that puts him at an internet startup run by Anne Hathaway, who plays Jules Austin. And she has just launched a fashion company but doesn't really know how to be a CEO. Of course, she doesn't want a senior intern working with her until she does. This is one of the most captivating performances I think Robert De Niro has given in a long time. It's a Nancy Meyers film. Huh. Very, very sweet and very, very fun.
All right, quickly, tomorrow night, Open Studio at 8:30 on WGBH2.
You can see more of my interview with new MFA director Matthew Teitelbaum. And we'll also sit down with dancer Shura Baryshnikov, of that famed family who's starring in Salome for Bridge Repertory Theater.
Thank you so much, Jared Bowen, who joins me every Thursday morning here on Morning Edition. Thanks, Jared.
Thanks, Bob.